Tennessee Titans went to Philadelphia on Sunday, got beat 35-10. A.J. Brown did the kind of things that A.J. Brown typically does. And the Titans started the week with some moves. On Monday, they signed free agent outside linebacker Terrell Basham, placed wide receiver Cody Hollister on injured reserve. Hollister now, the earliest he can be back is the season finale at Jacksonville. Tuesday, fullback Torrey Carter, defensive lineman Sam Okwonyo released. Kicker Caleb Shudak, who was released Saturday, brought back to the practice squad. Two other guys released from the practice squad. Oh, and then there's this. General manager John Robinson fired. His team's in first place. His team's almost certain to be in the playoffs for the fourth straight year. The fifth time in 6 years. Yet there's elements of this move that are not surprising. And we will look at that, look deeply at that move and the issues surrounding it here on this edition of Believe in Titans, brought to you by Bet Online with Denard Walker and John Glennon. Gentlemen, how's everybody today?
Good.
Doing well.
All right. So, again, Believe in Titans is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports, contests, and events with first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports information, from live in-game betting to props and futures. Head to BetOnline today and use your mobile device, or use your mobile device to join today to make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE50, that's BLEAV50, to receive your 50% discount. A welcome bonus is waiting for you on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right. So let's get right to it. I always enjoy this. The official press release from the Titans said that the Titans and general manager John Robinson part ways. John Robinson was fired. Denard Walker, what's the most surprising part of this decision to you? The timing of it, the fact that it happened at all. What stands out to you here right now?
Both, because this is a team that's still leading the AFC. They're the number right now. They're number one. And I'm trying to figure out this move. I mean, I've always believed when I've played in this game, someone taught me a long time ago, they used to say, Denard, expect the unexpected. That's for players and coaches. And the fact that you would make a move like right now, this organization would make a move like this. It's really scary because it's also kind of and it's saying to me that, I wonder if there's more moves that are about to happen that we don't know about.
Well, that's an interesting point then. Like as a player, players hate distractions. You know, players can deal with things in the locker room. They can deal with things on the field. How big a distraction is this for those guys in that locker room right now?
It's a big distraction. I mean, that's the general manager. I don't think it's going to affect this team because ultimately they're the ones who decide the fate on Sundays, Thursday, or Monday nights. So when you have players like Kevin Byard, you have players like Ryan Tannehill, it's their job to take control of that locker room. But this is a huge move. David, I don't understand. How do you fire a coach right now where you're still leading the AFC? I know you've lost two straight games. I understand that he didn't make a move in free agency. I thought he was going to go out and get at least a number one receiver. There were some good players out there. But I don't know. You two were – you guys are in the building, not me. I didn't see this coming.
John Glennon, there you go. Did you see it coming? And if not, what's the most surprising thing to you?
Yeah, I completely saw it coming. I just didn't want to let anybody know. I figured I didn't want to shock anybody. No, I certainly didn't see this coming. And I agree with Denard. You know, you look at the track record here. This is six straight winning seasons since he was hired in 2016. This is going to be the seventh straight winning season. The only team that's had more consecutive winning seasons currently is Kansas City with nine. It's let's see, six straight seasons. The only time this franchise, I believe, has done anything more than six straight seasons was seven, and that was 87 and 93. You've been to the playoffs four straight years. You're going to go to the playoffs again this year. That's going to be five straight. So what in the world is kind of my question. I think obviously the timing would lead us to believe that the AJ Brown trade factored heavily in this decision. AJ Brown is tearing it up in Philadelphia. Meanwhile, there's a huge hole in the Titans offense, and that whole situation was magnified 100 times over this past Sunday when AJ Brown tore the Titans apart. But it is strange enough, you know. First of all, it's you know, it doesn't happen all that often that you see a general manager fired compared to coaches. Second of all, it's rare, very rare, that you see a GM fired in mid-season. And third, you know, to have a GM fired with a background resume like he has put together just stuns me. Despite, you know, and David, I'm sure you'll touch on this too, despite Amy Adams Strunk has had her moments before in making some big decisions like that. But yeah, I'm pretty shocked.
Yeah, it's I think the general feeling among the fan base is John Robinson was going to be here forever. You know, like, general managers are like coaches for the most part. You get hired to be fired eventually. But this is a Tennessee guy who has talked about, you know, growing up rooting for this team and what it meant to run this team. You know, there was no sense that he was ever going to be looking for another job, and given his track record to this point, I mean, there was no reason to there was a lot of reasons to believe he would be here a long, long time. But, you know, it's interesting. People talk about Amy Adams Strunk. They refer to her in the organization as Miss Amy. Like, she's this sweet, nice teen mom kind of thing, you know, which kind of does her a disservice, because, you know, she is successful in the business world. She can make difficult decisions. And I think what you see with this team is she does not like to be embarrassed. And there was a certain level of embarrassment with watching AJ Brown do what he did on Sunday. And John, you referenced this. You can go back to 2015, you know, her first year in charge of the, or as controlling owner of the team. They go to Houston in week seven, get beat 20-6. Zach Mettenberger's the quarterback in that game, is sacked seven times, is just hammered throughout that game. And the next day, Ken Whisenhunt is fired. You know, that took
her
place
hometown as well. We should point out too.
Right. That's exactly right. That took place in her hometown. And that was not a good look. The next year they go to Chicago and the special teams have a brutal, brutal performance up there in a number of areas, including 12 men on the field at one point that was a very costly penalty. And the next day, Mike Mularkey, the head coach at the time, is told, you're going to fire your special teams coach, Bobby April, as I understand it, Mularkey and April were really good friends. You know, that was not an easy thing for Mike Mularkey to do, but if she sees something she does not like enough, then, you know, this is what's going to happen. And, you know, there were things, I think there were causes for concern, and, you know, we've talked about it. Isaiah Wilson in 2020 was a huge miss. Caleb Farley in 2021 is not working out well to this point, at least. Those two draft classes as a whole have not produced a whole lot. Julio Jones didn't work out the way you wanted. Jadeveon Clowney didn't work out the way you wanted. There's not been a suitable replacement for AJ Brown yet, although Treylon Burks is having his moments. There are things about John Robinson's tenure that you can say, well, I don't really like that. But you have to feel like he deserved the opportunity to fix this too going forward, given what he's been able to accomplish, given all the players they brought in off the street last year who came in and played well for them. But here we are. They're going forward with Ryan Cowden right now as the interim GM, and they have promised a quote unquote comprehensive search once the season starts. So, Denard, I'll go back to you. Is the next GM inheriting a really good situation, or is this person going to come in teetering on the brink of disaster, given given some of the missteps this franchise has had?
Well, at the end of the day, David, it's about winning. So when you look at this team, just look at the last 3 years in 2019. This was a team that took Kansas City all the way down, right to the wire, end up losing 35-24 in the AFC Championship game. You come back 2020, they're 11-5. Of course, they lose the wild card game to Baltimore. And then 2021, they're the number one seed in the league, in the AFC. This is a team, the number one seed in the AFC. And David, that's only happened three times in franchise history. That is John Robinson. So despite of some of the miscues, unfortunately, that he has no control over, none of us expected Isaiah Wilson to get drafted and then leave the NFL for a rap career. That was his decision. That was his decision, and it hasn't worked out well. But again, you have to, at the end of the day, it's about wins. It's about wins and losses. I don't understand this move. If you're a general manager, you coming in and you have to replace not only a Tennessee native, but you're also replacing a general manager. If you look at what he's done in seven seasons, it's unprecedented. This is a great resume. So I would tell Mrs. Adams Strunk, hey, listen, I played under your dad. I remember in the elevator when he called me Anthony Dorsett. I said, no, I'm Denard Walker. I'm the guy that in the offseason is going to be demanding some money from you. But again, this is a move that I just don't understand. You're still leading the AFC, and you have to put your differences aside. Yes, this team, they've lost, the last 2 weeks, and I know it's been tough, but you have to let Mike Vrabel and his staff work through these times. I don't understand. Why would you make a move right now while you're still the number one? I mean, you still got a chance to make the playoffs.
You're likely to make the playoffs.
Yeah, you're likely to make the
playoffs.
You
have to
no
do
sense.
A lot not to make the playoffs.
Exactly.
At this point, you know.
But let's talk about that, John. Where this team is, you know, comfortably in first place in the AFC South. But you look at their losses: Philadelphia on Sunday, the New York Giants in Week One, both among the top six teams in the NFC. You got Buffalo, Kansas City, and Cincinnati, three of the top four in the AFC. Are the Titans the worst of the good teams in the NFL right now? And is that something to feel good about if that's the case?
Yeah, I don't think anyone is sitting here saying, you know, the Titans are Super Bowl favorites or you know, one of the better teams in the NFL. There's no doubt about that. And there are certainly holes on this roster, you know, as there are with every team. But again, it's one thing, you know, to complain about, you know, a GM or a coach, you know, he made this mistake in the draft or, you know, or a coach who should have called this play, you know, every fan base, you know, for every single team has complaints about their coach and general manager. I guarantee it, you know, no matter who that person is, it's natural, but it's another thing entirely to take that to the next level and say, those are fireable offenses. And I do not think that at this point, what John Robinson had done, you know, is a fireable offense. You know, again, it's one thing to say, okay, we got to get rid of this guy, but you know, what's your plan B? Are you sure you have a better plan than a guy who came in, you know, when this team had won, you know, five games over 2 years? When this team had gone, you know, one winning season in the previous seven, zero playoff berths in the previous seven, and he turned this thing around, you know, with the help of that initial trade that he made for the first draft pick, and we have talked about how consistent, you know, things have gone. You know, that's again, I come back to the shock factor there, and to your original question again, I'll say, yeah, there are holes in this roster. No one is. No one is saying it's the best team, but is that a fireable offense? Is this one of the worst teams in the league? No. Far from it. That's for sure. And to fire him, not only fire him, but 12 games into the season too. It's to me is a complete head scratcher.
And he's a guy, John Robinson, keep in mind, is a guy who had the courage and the foresight to make a coaching change after his team had been to the playoffs and won a playoff game. You know, Mike Mularkey had two winning seasons, right? He went 9-7 both years. They went to Kansas City, came back in the second half, won a playoff game there. There was a lot to like, but he, you know, at that point, he was the guy who felt, well, yeah, things are good, but they need to be better. And I think Mike Vrabel can make things better for this team and moved quickly. I think, you know, I'm convinced he had his eyes on Mike Vrabel from the moment he made that decision. That wasn't a process where he evaluated a bunch of guys and Vrabel was the best. You know, I can't, you know, Vrabel's record speaks for itself too. And the 2021 coach of the year and all of that. And I can't help but wonder, as this roster has taken some hits over the year, what their relationship has been like. We're recording this on Tuesday. We'll hear from Mike Vrabel on Wednesday. I fully expect he will say all the right things about, yeah, you know, how much they enjoyed working together. This is the reality of the business, whatever they're going to say. But you have to believe that at some point over the last year or two, as things have changed, Mike Vrabel has gone into John Robinson's office and sort of pounded the desk, like, you gotta help me help you kind of thing. And you know, whether that argument went up the ladder to the owner's office and if that had any impact on this decision, then if it did, I don't know. I'm sure we're not going to hear that, but that's just one of those things that you can't help but think about at this point. Let's go back to Sunday a little bit and AJ Brown specifically. Denard, the two touchdown catches in particular stand out. The one, he just trucked Christian Fulton, who not only got hurt on the play, but then got called for a penalty too. Thank you very much. As he got knocked to the ground, and AJ Brown runs unguarded down the field. The other one, Trey Avery's got blanket coverage on him.
Yes.
And somehow or another, AJ just makes it look like an easy catch anyway. If you're a cornerback, Which one of those plays just angers you more if you're the guy trying to guard him?
It would be Christian Fulton. Christian is better than that on the out route and the out and up. First of all, Trey Avery, he gave up a few catches. But let me tell you something. Number 30 is a monster. If you're Tennessee fans and you're looking at how a player should be playing, look at number 30 on the field. And let me just tell you about that catch, David. That was what I call once in a lifetime catch. I've had coverage like that where you're draped all over the receiver, and those two are actually they're battling. And I like when the referee just let them fight for it. Unfortunately, Trey ends up taking a little slight, what I call his head kind of moves a little ways to the left. And unfortunately the ball just end up it just goes right into the basket of AJ Hands. You can't cover it no better than that. That's great coverage. And unfortunately, players and coaches would say this, they get paid to make right plays. And that's what happened. And with Christian Fulton, let me go back to, there's one play in particular, and this is what happened when AJ caught that long touchdown, but when his toe was out of bounds, what happened was that wasn't on Christian Fulton. That's on the defensive coordinator, Shane Bowen. They caught Tennessee in a blitz. And when you blitz, you send one more than they can block. Unfortunately, Philly, they got to it. So again, congratulations to Philly for picking that up. They picked the blitz up. And when you're a cornerback, what happens is you're taught to squat at 7 yards. If you're a defender, that's what you do. Unfortunately, AJ, it looked like kind of a double move. He kind of like gave him a little bit of a hesitation, and then he went up. That was nothing Christian can do. So that wasn't on Christian Fulton. But on the out route, Christian has to know better. You have to keep your eyes out of the backfield. So pretty much for the first quarter, the first half, a lot of what Tennessee was doing, it was kind of self-inflicted. It was just being not playing technique. And if they can get better in playing technique, they can play better on Sunday. They just, everything was technique. You can clean that up in the back half.
John, as you watched AJ Brown Sunday, it was impossible, though, was it not to think, boy, the Titans would be really dangerous if they had this guy in their offense still this season. Yes?
Yeah, no doubt. You know, and we've all talked about many times, you know, how much the Titans struggled for decades and find a homegrown wide receiver that was a real impact player. And they finally had one, a guy who went over 1,000 yards twice in his first 3 years. He made the Pro Bowl. You know, and we know also the kind of the storyline that led to the trade, you know, was that John Robinson determined that there was too much of a gap to bridge between the two sides. And you know, when AJ Brown got that sense that his money wasn't coming and it wasn't coming in a hurry, he was ready to move on. He was ready to get out. And that's when the cutoff communications came and, you know, the ask for a trade came. But in retrospect, you know, John Robinson could not have let that happen. I think it falls in his lap, John Robinson's lap, that when you find a player that is as valuable as AJ Brown was, that you have to find a way to bridge that gap. You have to find a way to pay him as much as the Eagles did, which was, you know, somewhat market value, honestly. And whether even if that means cutting other players that you thought you were going to have to rely on, you know, you do what you have to do in that kind of situation instead of trading away AJ Brown. So yeah, certainly, you know, when he was out there catching touchdown passes and then dropping X plays on the Titans left and right, that just magnified that point, you know, so incredibly. And I don't know if you guys saw the little video clip that's been going around. I'm not even sure who took it, but up in the owner's box of the Titans at the Eagles game, you know, Philly fans, Davey, you should be proud of your Philly people. You know, I guess this was after one of AJ's scores. Basically, there's, you know, several people that were basically turning around up right near the owner's box and flashing the bird,
Oh.
you know, into the Titans owner's box. To your point about Amy Adams Strunk clearly doesn't like to be embarrassed or humiliated. Well, that's that was probably not the best you know, step in the world for John Robinson at that point when Amy Adams Strunk is dealing with Philly fans throwing the bird at her after AJ Brown scores touchdowns. So yeah, it was it clearly stung.
Yeah, it's you have to wonder who she talked to too. I mean, clearly she thought about it for a day, and you know, did she just kind of sit in her office and kind of roll through scenarios and what have you, or did she talk to some people, and what kind of advice did she get? And, you know, she is not one who is comfortable in front of the media at all. There was no press conference to address this decision, just a press release with a fairly short statement. I don't imagine we're going to get a press conference at any point. So these are questions that are going to go unanswered. But John, you know, Ryan Cowden, the interim GM, is a similarly somewhat unknown, I guess, person within the organization. We heard from him at the start of training camp. He did a press conference with John Robinson. The majority of the questions for Robinson, you did speak to him at one point last season for a story you were working on. What's your sense of Ryan Cowden and what he has meant to this organization to this point?
Yeah, you know, in my dealings with him, you know, whether it was for that story or at the presser that you mentioned, I've, you know, my impression is a very sharp guy, very personable guy. You know, I certainly get the sense that he's a grinder as well. And as you pointed out, David, in your story on Ryan Cowden today, you know, he was one of John Robinson's, you know, first hires, and he's kind of been one of John Robinson's right-hand men here with the organization. So I think certainly this, you know, is a situation, you know, a bit of a trial run for Ryan Cowden, you know, as they look ahead to the next general manager spot. You know, I imagine it's kind of difficult to have a trial run as a GM during the season, you know, because honestly, probably your biggest decisions as a GM, you know, a lot of them come, you know, draft and free agency and that kind of thing. But certainly he'll get, you know, some opportunities to leave a mark, you know, on the Titans coming up, and I'm sure he'll be considered, as will, I'm sure, you know, Monty Ossenfort, Third year of the he's in his third year as the Titans what is it, director of player personnel, another guy that John Robinson has really counted on. And both those guys, Monty Ossenfort and Ryan Cowden, have had multiple interviews for general managers in the last few years. Haven't landed any, but certainly well considered around the league.
Yeah, and one of the interesting aspects of John Robinson's tenure too, I thought this was odd. I'm not going to say this was wrong, because everybody's going to do their job the way they feel like it. But John Robinson was a guy who was not just on the practice field every day. I mean, he was in the practices. He would run some of the drills early in practice, some of the one-on-one stuff, and he was very heavily involved during the kicking periods, and he'd go down and occasionally, work pads with defensive linemen or something like this. I thought that made him different in a way. And Denard, I want to ask you, like, how odd is that when you were playing, how much contact did you have with the GM during the season, during the course of a regular work week, for example? And should Ryan Cowden be a guy who becomes more familiar to guys in the locker room right now?
I had none unless you got in trouble. If you get in trouble, then you go see what they call ball. They called Sarge. They called Floyd Reese Sarge. But we didn't have much contact with him during the week. We saw him Sunday after the games. He would come in if we won. If not, you wouldn't see him. And so right now, if you're the new GM, what you have to do is to kind of leave your mark. What are you about? Again, this is. For John Robinson, this is not unusual. He was a football coach. He actually coached linebackers. And before he got into the kind of the office, what do you call it? A personnel office,
Front office,
in
the
his front
scout. He was
office,
a
yeah,
scout, yeah.
scouting New England. And just to kind of, as you alluded to earlier about Mike Vrabel and John Robinson relationship, this goes all the way back to New England. That's where he started out as a
Yeah.
scout. So there's an old saying that familiarity actually breeds success in this league. You'll see a lot of GMs or and they'll go back and get somebody that they're familiar with. But again, this is going to be a tough move. I don't understand this. I was always taught when you play this game, never allow your emotions to dominate your intellect, which means you should know better. And I wouldn't say that I'm shocked because I've seen some things and I'm kind of like, that's not right. But this is a situation that if Tennessee's not careful, it can actually haunt them. I mean, what John Robinson has done is just amazing. Look at the players that he's drafted. I know we talked about Isaiah Wilson, and I know Caleb Farley hasn't worked out, but he did draft Derrick Henry and a young man by the name of, is it the Marshall? Kevin Byard. And then not to mention, look at some of the free agents he brought in the past. DeMarco Murray, who's now, running backs coach down in Oklahoma. And isn't there a quarterback by the name of Ryan Tannehill that a lot of teams gave up on? Miami said, you know what, we need to get rid of this guy. And he's now in Tennessee and he's putting up some heck of a numbers. He played well. Unfortunately, Sunday, he just got, unfortunately, there was no line to protect him. But again, I just think that this is a situation I'm going to be scratching my head for a while.
Yeah, and Murray and Tannehill actually were trade acquisitions, and that's another bit of John Robinson's legacy that will go down. Like, he was not a guy who would sit around and hope for the draft to fall his way, or sit around and sort of wait for things to happen. If he felt there was a guy on the draft board and they were getting close to him, he made a trade, jumped up and got him. They needed a backup quarterback with some veteran experience in 2019 to, as sort of a safety net for Ryan Tannehill. So he goes out and gets Ryan Tannehill in a tremendous deal where they gave up very little and actually got a late draft pick back from Miami who turned into David Long, who, oh, by the way, is a really good draft pick too. And you can look at his success with undrafted free agents. A guy like, you mentioned Trey Avery right now, Tyrell Tart, and Aaron Brewer, who's a member of the starting offensive line right now, and on and on. So, given the successes, John, I'll ask you this: Does that help Ryan Cowden or Monty Ossenfort's chances of getting the job? Should Amy Adams Strunk, given a little time, think, you know what, there's a lot worth building on and continuing down the same path here, or should we be expecting a sort of a fresh new approach and a clear set of eyes on this franchise?
Yeah, that's the question, you know, whether these guys like Cowden and Austin Fort, you know, do they become tainted a little bit because they were right-hand men of John Robinson, who apparently, obviously, was persona non grata and was canned there. You know, I thought it was interesting. There have been a couple reports, you know, from some of the national guys, Schefter and I think somebody from the NFL Network, maybe Tom Pelissero, basically sort of alluding to the fact that you know, Amy Adams Strunk wasn't necessarily happy, not only with roster construction, but also the fact that maybe she wasn't included in as many conversations that she wanted to be. And I thought back to that, and I started thinking, I'd heard, you know, on more than one occasion, I can remember John Robinson saying, "Hey, one of the best things about Amy Adams Strunk is she lets us do our job. You know, she lets you know, me make personnel moves. She lets Mike Vrabel coach." Well, maybe you know, it took that a little bit too much for granted. You know, and what I'm trying to say here is that if I'm Ryan Cowden, or for that matter, for Monty Ossenfort, I would make it a priority to make sure that Amy
you don't say
is included in about every conversation, down to what the pregame meal is going to be. If I'm thinking that I'm going to be a GM, but you know, they both do have you know, very good track records. Like I say, my dealings with Cowden, you know, I was quite impressed. So I think. You know, I tend to think that they will not be shaded by the fact that they were part of the Robinson regime. I think this emotional move is done with, and I think it's going to be more, you know, clear-headed, in my opinion, moving forward.
We're in the home stretch here, and Denard, you referenced the offensive line a couple minutes ago. Derrick Henry has fallen to third in the league in rushing. Hasn't averaged better than 3.1 yards per carry over the last four games, has had fewer than 40 rushing yards each of the last two games, hasn't had a gain of 10 yards or more in the last three games.
Or
is this, you know, he had a 10 yard carry in the first
one.
Over
10 yards.
Right, yeah, yeah. I said 10 or more. Denard, is Derrick Henry in decline all of a sudden, or is this an offensive line problem?
This is an offensive line because they gave up six sacks Sunday. That was bad. If you look at that line from Philly, Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, talking about Javon Hargrave, and I'm not going to mention Josh Sweat. Every time I hear that name, I start sweating because it was like it turned into the second half, the Josh Sweat and Hassan Reddick show. They did not have an answer for that blitz. It just looks like every time they started, they come and it was a sack. And I love what Mike Vrabel did in pulling Ryan Tannehill out of the game in the fourth quarter. It was killing me to see that. But the offensive line right now, Dennis Daly, especially those tackles, they were out, not only outplayed, they were out physical, and Philly they went to work on him. They have to clean this offensive line up. I don't care. You can put Emmitt Smith in his prime. You can put Walter Payton in his prime. When you have a terrible offensive line, I don't care how good you are, you will not be able to run the ball. I played with the great Eddie George, but I guarantee you we had one heck of an offensive line. Brad Hopkins, Fred Miller. You're talking about the Hall of Famer, Bruce Matthews. We had Stepnowski. We had some dogs up front. That's how you win in this league, is in the trenches. Right now, Tennessee offensively, their line, they're hurting, David.
John Glennon, you wrote about this week. Mike Vrabel said Monday, anything is possible in terms of personnel changes, whatnot. A big target, I think, for a lot of people is left tackle Dennis Daly, who has sort of been you know, he's been locked in there ever since Taylor Lewan got hurt. His performance hasn't been spectacular. Do you believe Mike Vrabel that maybe they're considering change, and what are their options at left tackle or maybe some of the other spots on the line that you think might need to be addressed?
Yeah, you know, I thought Monday was really the first time, even though Dennis Daly had been brought up before, I thought that, you know, this was kind of the first time that Mike Vrabel opened the door ever so slightly, and said that, Larrivin Clark will compete, this week, basically in practice. So I get the sense that he is open to change, and honestly, like, how can you not be open to change at this point? Daly gave up three of the sacks on Sunday. If you look at the Pro Football Focus stats, Daly has given up nine sacks this year. That's tied for the most among tackles in the NFL. It's not, there are some tackles that give up a lot of sacks, and you say, okay, well, at least he's a great run blocker. I don't see evidence, and there's no evidence really to show that he is great in the run game either. So don't you have to at least try something else? Even if Larrivin Clark, doesn't work out well, maybe, it's a bit of a tiny upgrade. Maybe you only give up two sacks from the left tackle position, and all of a sudden that's a step in the right direction. So that to me is the only logic, or the only spot, or the move that I think Mike Vrabel would make, because as much as it also seems to make sense to maybe give Dylan Raiden's another shot at left tackle, the position he played in college and a start he made last year, they seem to show no inclination of moving him back to tackle from guard. And so far there seems to be no evidence that they're looking for anybody, off the roster either. So perhaps that is priority number one, for Ryan Cowden, at least finding a player or two and potentially bringing them in and giving them a shot at that position.
And up next, the Jacksonville Jaguars at 4-8. We've talked about how the Titans have not beaten the best teams in the NFL, but they have sort of feasted on the lower ranks of the NFL. Any reason, anybody concerned about Jacksonville here in the last minute or two of this program? Anybody see a problem after two straight losses here that can't be overcome by facing the Jaguars?
Well, if history repeats itself, this is a team that's below 500. So, or I'm sorry, so the Titans are 6-0. They're 6-0 this season, facing teams below 500. So let's cross our fingers they can get back on track.
And
Go ahead, John.
I was going to say, if history is any indication, if Derrick Henry is going to have any game that he's going to break out of his running slump, it's the Jacksonville Jaguars, where he's had, some of his best success over the years. And I think, I don't think Jacksonville has won in Nashville since something, 2013 or 2014. So all the arrows point to the Titans getting back on track at home this week.
Excellent point about Derrick Henry. Only the Houston Texans have been worse at stopping him over the years. So we will see how it plays out. As always, we will be back next week to talk about it. Thank you, as always, for listening. Denard Walker, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
John Glennon, thank you, sir.
Okay, thanks, guys.
And thanks, everybody, for listening and downloading. This is the Believe in Titans podcast, brought to you by Bet Online. We'll talk to you next week.